Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Some old school hockey marketing ideas coming up on the show, along with a return to our team of the day. The lead question, of course, though, is did you win the Amherst Alumni Golf Tournament yesterday?
No, I did not. We did have a fairly good day. I think we were six under, seven under, 15 was the winner. And but you know that course is hard, right? Like
here we go. It wasn't hard for the leaders, apparently.
It was fun though. It was a great day going back out on the course. I ran to the number one hole, which they were still on the green. And then I was chowing my burger down that I grabbed on the way out as I got there. And they're like, Marty, bring your putter. So I ran up there with my putter and I made the 15 footer right away. Boom, like right in. So it was like, yeah. And then it was fine. We had a good time, but, I got to, you know, say great turnout at the Rochester Americans Alumni Golf Tournament. We had obviously Don Stevens on the show yesterday. And Razor spoke about Scott Metcalf at the little get-together after, which was awesome. He told a story about how they were playing somewhere and they had a five-on-five fight. And you know, Metter's got a guy and fighting him, and Razor's got a guy and fighting him right in front of the visiting bench, the other team's bench. And as Metter is punching the guy out, he's like, Rob, Razor, we need milk and bread when we get home tonight. And he's punching him, giving him his grocery. And he goes, the whole bench was like, these guys are crazy. Like, he's calling him for his grocery order. So that was a great little story that they were talking about. And as I was leaving, this bunch of pigeons, and I'm saying it funny because that's how they got introduced by their leader, is the Flower City Warriors, mm-hmm. that the group of veterans that mm-hmm. Form a hockey team in yep. Rochester, and they play against other veterans and whatnot. So the guy's talking about some of the proceeds from the alumni golf tournament goes to help the veterans programs that the Amherst alumni do. They do a family skate, a learn to skate program every Sunday, yep. and they support the Flower City Warriors. And so the guy goes up there and he goes, well, I wanted to like let you guys know this is awesome. We went to a tournament this year in Long Island where the New York Islanders Warrior team was hosting, and we do this and we do that. And if you want to say hello to my teammates, the guys, they're the bunch of pigeons sitting at that table over there. So the guys at my tables, they're like, is pigeons like a hockey term? Because I'm like, yeah, it's like the bunch of beauties and pigeons and whatever. So I got to talk to them. Me and Razor stopped and talked to them afterwards. It was awesome. So Flower City Warriors, shout out.
Great day in the Flower City and surrounding area, and really nice to be a part of it yesterday. We look forward to it always. 91 on the current Amherst squad is Consta Hellenius.
Yes.
Without looking, doing any further research, who's the greatest 91 ever in NHL history?
Oh, man, the greatest 91. It was funny because the Detroit Red Wings put a hashtag #retire91 tweet that they quickly removed just to announce later that Sergei Fedorov is going to get his number 91 jersey retired in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
So he is one of them that I think would be at the top of the list. Now, I believe Tyler Seguin is 91, but I wouldn't put him up there as one of the best. I don't know who else would be number 91.
Dude, this is showing your weakness, kind of like left shot, right shot.
Yes, definitely. Numbers are not my strength.
Numbers are not your strength.
No, because I don't write the guy's numbers. I usually write the guy's names. When
you do?
Like,
oh my gosh, I never write names. So if you ever see me double clutch, it's because I'm having an in-brain panic of like, oh, I can't remember the name attached to that number. But from a short form standpoint, I only ever write numbers. Like it's
Brad
91.
Richards was 91, right? 19 and 91, I think.
Steven Stamkos.
Oh, yeah, Stammer.
But yes, right. Here's the debate. Steven active, year two of his deal with Nashville, recent team of the day. Detroit, not our team of the day, making news because of Sergei Fedorov. But, like, I think most people are going to say Fedorov's the better player than Steven Stamkos, even though Stamkos will go down as one of the great all-time goal scorers, right?
Yes. And they both won cups, and they both have played international hockey, and they both have left their marks.
Yep.
This is a lot tighter than I would want it to be. My leaning right now leans towards Sergei Fedorov. I think there was an element of wow, right? Like Pavel Bure coming in and Sergei Fedorov, the speed, the excitement. But what happens is Sergei Fedorov, to me, was one of the best all-around players that you can find. Like he had an element of checking and defensive side to the game that was two Selkies, right?
Two Selkies, yes.
So that's why I saw you put two fingers up. I'm like, yeah, I know he won once, but I think he's a multiple Selke winner. And that to me is a big, big factor in saying, look, Steven Stamkos, unbelievable career. That keeps going and the goals, yes, absolutely. But I think that Fedorov with the Selkies just kind of go a little bit further. But man, when Sergei Fedorov, I think he was dating Anna Kournikova.
Yeah.
And Mike Ramsey, I believe, played with Fedorov in Detroit when he was dating Anna Kournikova. And it was like when Kournikova would like sometimes meet him on the road because she had her busy tennis schedule or whatever. Rammer was saying like, if they came down to go to dinner, she was dressed up like it was the Oscars. Like it was something to see. So, but that was a power couple, power Russian couple with Fedorov and Anna Kournikova for sure.
An earlier day Google search suggested that Butch Goring was the first 91. Oh, yeah. And of course he was arguably the acquisition of all time at the trade deadline that, pushed the Islanders en route to, I mean, we had talked about this with our team of the day a while back about, you know, teams trying to get over the hump. And who was it this year? Obviously it was, Edmonton, but there was somebody else that we were talking about that has been, Dallas, of course.
Dallas, yeah. I was going to say.
And like you go back to the Islanders of the 70s, like four times in 5 years, they were in the conference final before they ever rattled off the four straight cups.
Yeah.
Like, holy cow, that's a lot. That is a lot. And, you know, so number 91, Butch Goring came in from Los Angeles and changed the fate of their franchise. And you mentioned Tyler Seguin, Vladimir Tarasenko, of course, is proudly worn number 91. Excellent player, Stanley Cup winner. Can you name the only Sabre to wear 91?
I was going to do a quick search because I was like, who wore it for the Sabres 91? Wouldn't be able to name you the only one.
Greg Cajula for 7 games.
Okay, so I didn't play with him. I was going to say, like,
No, you did not play with him. You analyzed his 7 games.
Yeah, I'm like, if I played with him and I forget the 91, although there was always some weird numbers. Okay, so you mentioned a quick Google search, and I mentioned to you that a couple of days ago or last week, like, did you Google back in the days and... Or did you run to the library to get the yearbook?
Yes.
And because our team of the day is the New Jersey Devils, and a lot of, you know, you talk about the Devils, it's Jack Hughes, and I didn't want to rewatch Jack Hughes getting hurt last night, but I wanted to get a context of that game with the Vegas Golden Knights. So I write down Jack Hughes injury, and then a quick Google AI overview says Hughes collided with Golden Knights defenseman Alex Pietrangelo and fell awkwardly to the ice. I'm like, uh-uh.
No.
Like, we can't trust AI all the time. Like, you got to do your own research knowing that it was with Jack Eichel that they collided and fell awkwardly into the boards. But that's what happens. Like, I mean, we can Google search, we can ask, you know, ChatGPT or whatever to give us the answers, but you always have to do your homework because they could be wrong.
Do you think, just to put a bow on that 91 discussion after you veered into the Devil's lane, do you think Consta will wear 91 eventually with Buffalo?
Yes. I think it's a good number. I think 91 is a very good number. It's, look, Fedorov was flashy. That's great. Steven Stamkos is a flashy kind of one-timer. He had the blonde hair, the whole tempo look to him. Now moving on to Nashville since last year. But I think Konstantelainas, the 91 looks really good on him. And I know people are going to say it's a number or whatever. I'm not big in numbers, but I liked certain type of numbers and how they fit with the player. Mm-hmm. And I think with Konstantelainas, that fits really well. I was just telling the story yesterday about how at the Amherst golf tournament, we had three people there that have an NHL rules written after them. So you got the robbery rule, which is if you lose your jersey and it goes over the head, it's a game misconduct. You got to tie it down. You have me with the 00, can't wear 00 anymore. It was 1 through 99 and now 1 through 98 mm-hmm. with the Wayne Gretzky 99 being retired all around the league. And the other one was the Legio rule. And we talk about the fair play scandal, him knocking the net off. So there's three people there that have.
Is that an NHL rule, though, because of him? Not really, right?
Like, it is an NHL rule now. So if you.
But now, because of that?
Yeah. So the NHL and.
I would have thought it would have been in place a lot longer ago based on Roger Nilsson probably employing that tactic in the 80s.
No, the rule was it was a penalty shot. And because he did it in the AHL, then they kind of took a look at it, and then he did it again in Germany with Red Bull. The NHL and the IIHF basically said, okay, here's the rule now. Hmm. If at any point on a rush attempt scoring chance, the goaltender knocks the net off on purpose, it is going to be an awarded goal. So there's mm-hmm. a David Legio rule right there.
Cool. Did you guys get a picture together?
No, but we... We were delayed on the 17th hole, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It's a par 5.
No, 18 is the par 5.
Oh, no, it's on the maybe 8th hole. Mm-hmm. 8 holes, the par 5 come down the hill, and then you got the 9th hole across the water, I think, with the double bridge. Anyway, and there was like 3 groups there, so we sat on the hill. He was 2 groups in front of me, so we sat on the hill and, you know, kind of chatted a little bit. It was kind of funny because his group was awesome. The group before us was great. The group behind us was great. So, you know, when we got held up a couple of times, but we were held up with some great people.
If you, Razor, and Legio had your headshots on a T-shirt, would the caption be "Rule Breakers" or "Rule Makers" under it?
League minimum.
No, that's Razor exclusive. We know that.
Oh. It would be Rule Makers.
Rule Makers.
At the time, they're not rules. We are not breaking any rules.
Right. I like it.
We made the rules, so that's good.
Add it to the list of T-shirts that are going into heavy production. Hey, what's
Razor,
the
do you know how many Razor? I'll give you the over under how many shots did Razor hit in the golf tournament yesterday? Over under a half a shot.
Oh, he had one.
He had none. He drove.
Oh, he didn't
have his clubs.
Hang on. He didn't putt?
Oh, he may have putt.
That's
I said that was the game. He goes, Marty, I didn't even hit one golf ball today. So
this is okay. We may need clarification on this because if he putted, that's hitting one and that counts as a stroke. And then I bet the over. So I get it. But
so you get it. You probably would win the over. But yeah, so it ended up being a 6-hour round, like because we had a 4:30 like a team meeting and I putted my last hole. I was driving the cart, and I got on the meeting at 4:30 just in time for that.
Well, here's hoping Konstantelainas rocks 91 heretofore, and that would include a rookie game against the New Jersey Devils on September the 12th. That is the first game of the Prospects Challenge this year for the Sabres, and we're expecting Helenius and, obviously, at least 17 other skaters in the lineup for Buffalo that night against New Jersey, kicking off a weekend that... settles right in the midst of Sabres Fan Fest and obviously includes teams beyond what Buffalo will be seeing, which is New Jersey on Friday, Columbus on Saturday, and Pittsburgh on the Monday. And the Monday is always a noon start. It's like getaway day from the Prospects Challenge as everybody departs in good time so they can get back to their respective cities and typically open their main camps with some of those rookies from the Prospects Challenge included in it. So you'll also see prospects from Boston. And who else am I missing? Just Boston, I guess, is the only team
Boston,
that Buffalo
Columbus,
doesn't play.
New Jersey, yeah, Pittsburgh.
Boston's the only one that Buffalo doesn't play. In the tournament.
How about this? On Saturday the 13th, I believe that is.
Yes.
Columbus and Buffalo. So Shout out to Eric Bolton, who celebrated his 49th birthday on Friday. No, mm-hmm. not Friday, on Sunday. Was it yep. Sunday the 17th? Sure. And so I went with him. We went over to his favorite place and one of our favorite places back in the days, Falletta's in Clarence, and sat there. And his youngest boy, so Sawyer Bolton, is with the Flyers organization, played junior Sabres. And but Ryder, who plays junior, played with London, won a Memorial Cup, and now is playing in Brantford, is going to be with the Columbus Blue Jackets, the rookie team. So he will play the Sabres on Saturday. So there will be a Bolton running around the ice for Columbus on that Saturday against the Sabres prospect.
Well, whether it's Prospects Challenge or main camp, there's definitely some heaviness to Buffalo's roster when you'll see it on display in mid-September when all yes. of this starts to unfold. And that kind of ties in with our team of the day because, of course, Buffalo dropped the first two to New Jersey last year overseas. And then in their only victory on home ice, it was overshadowed by a massive nascent hit on Thompson. So when I mention old school marketing off the top of the show, Marty, how do you feel about from now moving forward, so September, October, November, for the next 3 months, we refer to the one and only home game featuring the Devils and Sabres this year as Black and Blue Friday, right after Thanksgiving. Let's knock the stuffing out of them.
I love it, Duffer. I love it. And we can take a picture of my arm, who's black and blue right now, and say, if you come out of the game and you don't have bruises on your body, some way, shape, or form, the fans included, the announcers included, Razor has got to take a puck to the face at some point.
Stop taking pucks to the face. Maybe he can just stick his arm out. And
I know, like, exactly. Stop it. Bruise your hand or something. But I do agree that I think this is one of those that fans are going to circle and say, look, it started with Brendan Dillon and JJ Peterka in Europe when the Sabres started the first two games against the Devils over there. Now, you're right. Like, we talked about it off-air beforehand. Alex Tuck went and fought Dillon right there. It was a good response. There was no response when Nason hit Thompson, and that's something that irked Lindy Ruff and the Sabres. Tage Thompson did an interview this summer, and he talked about it, about how he's like, yeah, that wasn't great. You know, you look around, and nobody's doing anything. So, yeah, Black and Blue Friday. I love that marketing aspect of it, and we should start it right now as a
single as game a tickets up. Are available at Sabres.com, just so you know.
Absolutely. But I do look at the Devils lineup, and I'm like, okay, so, you know, they got Brendan Dillon on the back end. That's got some toughness to him. And Brendan Dillon reminds me of a Bobby Bugner back in the days, like a guy that will fight, but because he's strong, but he's not known as a fighter per se. But
Bugner racked up the penalty minutes, though.
Yeah, because he loved having the boxer's robe with the yeah. with Jim Pizzitelli and,
there's a big
and
difference,
be part of the wrecking crew.
Big difference between Bugner and Dillon, though. You know what that is?
The points?
No.
The wins and fights? Because Bugner no. went 1-99, I think, in the 100 fights.
No. Unless I'm misremembering, like Roger Clemens years ago, pretty sure that Brendan Dillon leads all active players in most games played without being drafted.
Oh,
he will
really?
Surpass 1,000 games played this year, which is pretty remarkable. And do you know
that's which, remarkable, you're right.
Do you know which Sabres analyst I think of when we talk of Brendan Dillon?
Ooh, Sabres analyst? Like mm-hmm. former?
Like in my era with the team. If one can call such a period of time one's you're era.
You're thinking like Roby?
Mike Robitaille, when Brendan Dillon was young with the Dallas Stars.
Okay.
He would like... He loved this player. Could never say enough good things about Brendan Dillon. And I think
I would say that's the kind of player Roby would love. Absolutely.
Right. But Marty, this is 11 years ago.
Yeah.
An undrafted player. And we're talking about this guy who just signed a nice, tidy little 3-year, $4 million a year deal on the heels of a nice extended run. He is what he is with Winnipeg. He is what he is. The Devils knew that, brought him in. And guess what? They were top five defense in the NHL last year. Like, Brendan Dillon was a really good fit for this team, and he's had a very nice career, and I think that's the point I'm trying to drive home.
So the Devils, let's start on defense, right? They 2 years ago, the Devils were giving up 3.43 goals per game, and that was 26 in the NHL. And they shaved almost a full goal per game, 0.8 goals per game, and they went to top five. Yes, they added Jacob Markstrom, but it wasn't Markstrom all season long. Jake Allen had a big part of it, but I feel like their defense, Luke Hughes, Brett Pesce, Siegenthaler, Hamilton, Dillon, and Simon Nemets, who was...
Kovacevic was a huge
Kovacevic
part of
was
last
was a big
year.
Part of that, too.
He,
yes,
he starts this year hurt, but he actually bumped Nemets from making the team last year.
Yes.
Now, with Kovacevic being injured for night one, recovering from a knee injury, there's opportunity for Nemets, like he did in the playoffs, to take that spot, and then we're going to see again where the chips fall here on the blue line. Is Hamilton there long-term? Is Hughes going to sit here and wait... his deal, Luke Hughes, that is, when all relative websites pertaining to salary cap, but my favorite, Puckpedia, tells you that 2 years from now, the Devils have $62 million in cap space. Mm-hmm. You're telling me Luke Hughes is not looking at that before signing this next contract?
Do you sign a bridge if you're Luke Hughes?
No. Pay.
Well, yeah, but they only have $6 million in cap space this year. And I would think that Luke
Hughes...
Unless
you trade someone.
Yeah, I guess you could do that. And
okay, do the bridge. I mean, sure, do the bridge.
But you mentioned, right, like the Devils have Kovacevic, who may start the season hurt. He's $4 million. So maybe you can use some long-term IR to start the season and say, I got a little bit more wiggle room. But I'm looking at Luke Hughes, and I think... On long term, on a 6 or 7 year deal, he could be an $8 million player, right? So that's what it is. Now, could you sign a 2 years at 5.5 just to say I'm under the salary cap right now, but in 2 years from now, it's going to cost you 10 plus million, right? That's what Luke Hughes may be thinking right now. But I love their defense. I love their defense. I love their group of defense. I think that Sheldon Keefe, second year as a head coach now, after leaving Toronto and going to New Jersey, has done a great job to build that group. But the big question is more like, what is the identity of the New Jersey Devils? Because right now, if we look at the numbers, they were a good defensive team and had solid goaltending, and it's the way they were built. But I want to say that the identity of the New Jersey Devils is really Jack Hughes. And Jack Hughes in 62 games last year, the team was plus 10 in wins-loss record. And when he missed the last 20 games and the 5 games in the playoffs, they were minus 4. There's a big difference right there.
You won't be surprised to learn that I took those numbers a step further.
Oh,
so
yes, please. Thank
they
you.
Aren't... necessarily directly related to Hughes' absence. This Devils team was 13 games over 500 after Christmas and a win against Carolina on December 27th. From that point on, with Hughes in the lineup for a bunch of it, they went 18-22-4. So yes,
they limped in with 91 points, right? Like 91 was the cutoff. Montreal 8 at 91. Columbus was coming off and up and trying to catch them. They it's like, for a golf analogy, it's like that ball was on the edge and they walked very slowly to their ball as a bug landed on it and then made it fall into the cup.
Well, you have opened the door for an awful lot more discussion on Jack Hughes, his impact, what the Devils' true identity is, because keep in mind, this is a New Jersey team under Lindy Ruff that was 112 points. Then it went to 81. Then last year, despite our concerns post-Christmas, they did get up to 91. So they've made the playoffs 2 of the last 3 years after missing the playoffs in 9 of the previous 10.
Yep. Yep.
So what exactly are they, especially in year two under Sheldon Keefe? We already mentioned that the Devils and Sabres are going to kick off the Prospects Challenge. That happens on September the 12th. We're looking forward to that entire week, really, when the rookies arrive. They get set for the Prospects Challenge. We'll have fans in the building as part of FanFest, and we want you to be at Hockey Fest. It's the all-ages street hockey tournament in conjunction with FanFest. It takes place September 13th. All skill levels welcome. You can visit sabres.com/hockeyfest. So sign up your team today. And of course, when you're there, check out all the scheduling that weekend as it pertains to games in the Prospects Challenge. The following week is when the Sabres main camp will open up. The Devils and Sabres have met just once in playoff history. The Devils are our team of the day. We'll continue that next on Sabres Live.